Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Q3 and 9 months FY 2023 earnings conference call of HDFC Life Insurance Company Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Ms. Vibha Padalkar, MD and CEO of HDFC Life Insurance. Thank you, and over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, Rutuja. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for joining us for the discussion on our results for the 9 months ended December 31, 2022. Our results, including the investor presentation, press release, and regulatory disclosures, are already available on our website as well as that of the stock exchanges. I have with me Suresh Badami, Deputy Managing Director, Niraj Shah, CFO, Eshwari Murugan, our Appointed Actuary, and Kunal Jain from Investor Relations. I will take you through the key highlights of our 9 months FY 2023 results and would be happy to take questions post that. As you're aware, we have completed the merger of our subsidiary, Exide Life, in October 2022. Henceforth, we will be reporting only the merged numbers as our businesses are now fully enmeshed. The previous year numbers, hence, might not be strictly comparable. While globally, headwinds persist from an economic perspective, India appears to be relatively better positioned. Insurance as a sector continues to be a beneficiary of a relatively robust economy, stable savings trends, and favorable regulatory regime. Against this backdrop, we continue to maintain a steady growth trajectory. In Q3, we grew by 17% in terms of individual WRP, which is ahead of industry growth. On a year-to-date basis, we grew by  13%, leading to a market share of 15.8% amongst private insurers. Despite intense competition, we have consistently been ranked amongst the top three life insurers across individual and group businesses. Our product mix remains balanced with non-par savings at 39%, participating products at 29%, ULIPs at 21%, individual protection at 4%, and annuity at 6% based on individual APE. Within the non-par segment, our shorter tenor product, Sanchay FMP, continues to do well and now forms about a sixth of this segment. HDFC Life remains enthused over the protection opportunity in India whilst balancing it with good risk management in a holistic and calibrated manner. We maintain market leadership in credit life by delivering strong growth of 52% across nearly 300 partnerships. Whilst growth in retail protection remained tepid on a YOY basis, we saw sequential growth of 13% in quarter three. Online search trends indicate that we continue to be amongst the top searched companies in our peer set. There has been normalization of searches for term as a category to pre-pandemic levels. We have taken several initiatives to improve customer convenience, such as development of an in-house automated underwriting engine, mobile cardiac assessment, and medtech solutions to measure heart rate, BMI, and other vitals using video inputs from the customer's mobile devices. With a combination of data analytics, insights into customer profiles, and calibrated risk retention, overall protection APE grew by over 20% in 9 months FY 23, and we expect individual protection to continue picking up in the coming quarters. On the retirement front, we have steadily gained market share in the annuity business. Our annuity business in 9 months FY 23 grew by 22% on received premium basis compared to a 1% growth for the industry. APE growth is much higher at 68% due to a pickup in our regular premium annuity product, systematic retirement plan. Moving on to key financial and operating metrics. We are on track to deliver margin neutrality for the combined entity for the year, having delivered a new business margin of 26.5%, similar to that in 9 months FY22. The value of new business is Rs. 2,163 crore, implying a year-on-year growth of 22%. Our embedded value stood at 37,702 crores as on December 31, 2022, with an operating return on embedded value of 17.5% for 9 months FY23. Profit after tax for 9 months FY23 stood at Rs. 1,001 crore, a robust year-on-year increase of 18%. The profit emergence continues to be aided by strong growth of 30% in back book surplus. Our solvency ratio was 209% as on December 31st, 2022. Renewal collection trends continue to be healthy on the back of improving persistency. Our 13th and 61st month persistency for limited and regular pay policies stood at 87% and 52% respectively. Next, on channel performance. Our bancassurance channel grew by 18% in 9 months FY23 based on individual APE. We have started seeing the positive impact of a closer collaboration with HDFC Bank as the merger process progresses ahead steadily. We continue to see strong growth momentum across other valued relationships with us either increasing or holding our counter shares. Our distribution network has been growing with time as we build newer long-lasting partnerships. This quarter, we are pleased to announce our corporate agency partnership with AU Small Finance Bank. We believe AU Small Finance Bank, with its vast presence and a customer base of more than 3 million customers, will further strengthen our efforts and contribute significantly towards financially securing a large number of individuals. We look forward to creating new milestones as we walk ahead together in this journey. We continue to grow well across the board. Our large channels, other than HDFC Bank, recorded growth of over 20% on a year-to-date basis. We would like to take this opportunity to thank all our corporate agents and bank assurance partners for their continued support. Our agency channel clocked more than 2x company-level growth in individual APE in the 9 months FY23. The share of the channel has increased from 14% to almost 18% in the merged entity. We continue to focus on improving activation and productivity across our base of financial consultants. We expect growth in this channel to be driven by deeper geographic and customer penetration. We are happy to share that the post-merger integration and synergy realization from the combined business is progressing as per plan. This has been demonstrated by achievement of margin neutrality during this period. The newly added distribution partners now have access to HDFC Life's products and digital capabilities. Our subsidiary HDFC Pension Management Company's AUM doubled in less than 17 months to reach the Rs. 40,000 crore milestone on 2nd January 2023. For 9 months FY23, HDFC Pension has a market share of 40%, up from 37% last year, with AUM growing by 63%. We are pleased to announce that our subsidiary, HDFC International, has been granted the certificate of registration to set up a branch in GIFT City by the relevant regulator. The branch will commence business with and operations on receiving other statutory licenses and approvals. On to the tech front, we have initiated a technology transformation exercise with the objective of building intelligent systems and platforms for insurance reimagination, christened Inspire, to aid scale up our business. A new age enterprise and data architecture will be built to enhance our go-to-market capabilities and also improve the overall customer experience going forward. Moving on to regulations, there are many regulatory changes proposed by IRDAI that are aimed at increasing insurance penetration and facilitating sustainable growth of the industry and ease of doing business. We welcome the relaxations provided by a regulator with respect to allowing certain categories of products to be launched through the use and file approach, relaxation and solvency requirement for ULIPs, dematerialization of insurance policies, and allowing insurance companies to raise alternative investments like subordinated debt and preference shares without seeking prior approval of the regulator. Further, the IRDAI is also examining implementation of risk-based solvency approach. We believe that this will benefit the sector by not just freeing up excess capital deployed, but also ensure capital required is in line with the risk on the balance sheet. We also welcome the changes recommended by Ministry of Finance, including composite license and permission to distribute other financial services products. We believe that such changes can further the overall development of the sector. To conclude, we remain enthused with the growth potential of the sector and are committed to increasing insurance penetration in a meaningful way. The detailed disclosure on our results is available on our investor presentation. We're happy to take questions now.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and 1 on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use handsets. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Suresh Ganapathy from Macquarie Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Vibha. So two, three questions I had. First, you know, all the guaranteed return policies that you have been selling, can you let me know as a percentage of policyholders, AUM, what would be the outstanding number?
Yes, you want to take this? Yeah, hi, Suresh.
Yeah, yeah, so this would be about, again, about 15-odd% of the number at the overall level. But
overall AUM, policyholder AUM, you mean to say?
Yeah, so that's about 2,40,000 crore, right? So the total amount would be around in the 12-14% range. But I don't know if that's the way you want to really look at it, because, you know, the...
Yes, the context in which I'm asking this question is one of your competitors, obviously, is at 3%. So the number is hugely different and 5 times the number that you're talking about. So I know, of course, that, you know, I mean, things could change, but you're pretty confident about the fact that the interest rate risk is reasonably managed here, right?
Yes, Suresh, honestly, you know, the way to look at it is in terms of the scale at which you're operating when you started this segment, and also how you're managing the risk in the particular. In fact, we don't even look at it in the manner that, you know, in terms of total AUM, what is the kind of number that this is. We basically look at it in terms of the various categories and how are we managing the risk on each of the categories. Are we comfortable with the level at which we are operating? Answer is yes, because we are using the required hedging mechanisms to manage the risk in that, and managing the spreads by being fairly disciplined in the market in terms of repricing. So all the fundamentals there are, you know, in place from that perspective. You know, it really depends on, you know, at what point in time you started the business, and we're not even sure how, you know, some of the folks are tracking it. A lot of it is also to do with the annuity business, which is single premium, which is part of this. Risk management is very, very different. On the group side also, there will be certain products. So all of this is, you know, it forms part of that base. So I think it's better to kind of look at it in isolation in terms of each of the categories and how the risk is getting managed there.
Another point to add here, Suresh, is that if you look at slide 23 of our investor presentation, we've given sensitivity to interest rate changes. And also for quite some time, ever since we launched this category, we've been giving sensitivity of just this category to interest rate changes as well. So that is really what is important as against, you know, what is it as a overall. The overall is relevant if it is entirely unhedged or largely unhedged position.
Okay. Okay, and how much would of course, anecdotal evidence has revealed Sanchay Plus has done very well this quarter. As a proportion of overall premiums, how much would be Sanchay Plus AP, individual AP, if you can give that number?
So overall, Sanchay Plus and Sanchay FMP is about 39% for the period. And okay. Sanchay, Vibha mentioned Sanchay FMP is about 1/6 of that overall. So about Sanchay Plus would be about early 30s. The rest of it would be Sanchay FMP.
For the third quarter, you mean to say?
I'm sorry?
For the third quarter.
No, I'm talking about for the period. For the period, nine months.
Okay. Yes, yes. Okay.
Also, within Sanchay Plus, there are shorter end variants, there are longer end variants and so on. And of course, the 1/6 of the business is Sanchay FMP, but also the balance also is various tenors.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Swarna Mukherjee from BNK Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. Two questions. First, on the margin side. So if I look at the product mix, have remained fairly, you know, the quality of the mix has not kind of significantly changed. And I think the share of higher margin products look fairly steady in the mix. In fact, in certain cases like non-par or individual protection, it has gone up quite a bit. However, margins look fairly, you know, fairly stable. It has not gone up to that extent in any way, you know, the way the mix have panned out. So just wanted to know, is there a factor of also, you know, how the channel mix has played out in this? Because I see that the broker channel has done quite well. Now, how could the cost structure be in that and whether it is impacting the overall margin profile or not? And so just one addendum to that question was that given that for 9 months we are at 26.5%, I think, in terms of VNB margin, and for full year our guidance was a flattish structure of 27.4% odd. So last year Q4 we had a very spectacular performance in terms of margin. Are we kind of confident of repeating that again this time, or would we be kind of bringing the guidance down? So first question would be that.
I think just to answer your last point, yes, we are reasonably confident of margin neutrality on a full year basis versus last year. And just to clarify, this will be at an overall consolidated level. Neeraj, you want to take the question on the waterfall?
Yeah, so the margin expansion that you see and you're referring to is a function of a couple of things. On the product mix side, you've seen that unit link mix for the period has dipped significantly from 26% last year to 21%. And that has been replaced largely by the non-par business on the individual side. Also, there's a significant shift in the annuity business, as you can see, right? Between both individual and group annuity, the mix was about 5 to 6% last year. It's moved to 8%, and that's a very significant shift. Also, in the other group businesses, the fund business, which is a low-margin business, has dipped significantly, and the credit life business has grown at over 50% for the nine-month period, right? So there's a significant upgrade really in terms of the product mix that has happened, apart from the usual elements around on the expense side. You see a negative there. That is in terms of a function of a couple of things. One is in terms of it is reflecting the overall business now, including Exide Life, which was operating at a certain scale. And as Vibha did mention, that all of this gets subsumed in the margin neutrality objective that we have for the end of the year.
Sure. So, if you are even comparing 9 months to 9 months, the thing what I wanted to ask was that, I see that the product mix has evolved to be, you know, a higher mix of better margin products. But despite that, the margin hasn't, you know, doesn't look like it has gone up that much. So that's what my query was, that then is it a function of cost only or anything else to look into that?
No, so see, the number that we're talking about, 26.5 for the period 9 months, is including Exide Life, right? And if you recollect, in the previous period for the 6 months, we had reported standalone margins for Exide Life and for HDFC Life. The Exide Life numbers, if you remember, were in single digits. So that obviously will have an impact in terms of the overall number, and that's the reason why we talked about margin neutrality in the first place when we announced the transaction. And soon after that, we basically said the first objective is to obviously preserve the business and to achieve margin neutrality, which we have achieved in this period.
And in fact, just to add there, we said margin neutrality will take about a year, and we have managed to advance it by about 9 months. So actually, if hypothetically, if we were to deconstruct before and after of the merger, then HDFC Life margin, you're right to say that has gone up, and then offset by Exide Life's margins. But even there, synergy extractions are happening as we speak, and that's why we have been able to deliver margin neutrality sooner than what we had thought it would be possible.
Great. That helps. Also, if you could give some comments on two product segments. One is individual protection and other, I think, group annuity. So on the growth on these both two categories, if you could share some comments on, you know, say, for example, individual protection, what kind of products and what kind of channels we are tapping in, or is it ROP or pure term in group annuity? Have we got a sizable tender recently which has helped the book? So some comments on that.
Yeah, sure. So, see, individual protection continues to trend upwards. So, sequentially, we've grown about 13%. NOPs also continue to move upwards. However, there is a both in ticket size also for it to make a difference, as well as, you know, all the headwinds that we've talked about in the past about medicals and so on. and that if you have 10 minutes with a prospective customer, what are you likely to sell and the surety of being able to convert and so on, you know, while there is a need-based assessment. But at the same time, reality is that protection customer would have to be a little bit more patient and go through hoops, especially if they are slightly of an older age. So you're seeing all of that, but what we are fairly happy about now is that the reinsurer arrangement is now again back in the spirit of partnership. There is learning from both ends. Some of the things that perhaps were difficult for us to reinsure, now there are conversations that are happening. So in that sense, in terms of supply side stability, that has happened. Second is we have raised 2,000 crores of capital. So we are, with the use of analytics, we are seeing, are there certain lives wherein we can take that on our books. Thirdly, what we are seeing is that in terms of digital, in terms of improving our journeys, as well as through our partnerships, can we, and product innovation, how do we continue to make inroads into protection? Suresh, you want to add anything?
So, just to add, I think Vibha covered it, but we did launch C2P Super as a product this year. It has got us good traction across a lot of our partners. We have obviously, you know, based on the certification and a lot of analysis in terms of the risk and analytics and which segment we want to play in, we are slowly increasing our focus in terms of growing the retail protection. Of course, having mentioned that, we continue to ensure that at an overall basis, we are agnostic to both the credit life protection as well as this, which has grown for us at 52%, which allows us to play very sensibly in terms of the overall risk that we are taking on the retail protection. There has been a little bit of a muted response on the customer sentiment, and you know the overall demands are low in the market. But having said that, our search for HDFC Life remains one of the topmost search names in terms of Google searches. So we do have a brand presence. Our product has had a great presence across some of our key web aggregator platforms as well as our channel partners. We have received fairly good response, and we believe in Q4, we will continue to show the sequential progress which is there. Similarly, on group annuity, I think we have a very, very strong presence. We have a large market share which happens on that, and that segment has grown significantly by almost 50% plus in terms of growth. So, you know, that remains, like we had mentioned earlier, a key focus area for us. Yeah, 56% actually is the growth that we have seen over last year. And that's the kind of number that we believe we will continue to focus on. There again, we see a large opportunity. In fact, it's not just on group annuity. We are looking at seeing how can we can scale up even the open market opportunity on the annuity business. So the OMO opportunity also remains fairly large for us. So I think a combination of product features, we are looking at some other products which can get launched in this. Even in the term product, I think we are now looking at how do we look at products which can probably cater to the higher ticket size and look at how we price. And you know, if you looked at over the last few quarters, we have priced our term product very sensibly as compared to, you know, what is the kind of risk that we want to take. And we will continue doing that over the next 2 quarters.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, in order to ensure that the management is able to address questions from all participants, please limit your questions to 2 per participant. The next question is from the line of Madhukar Ladha from Nuvama Wealth Management. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon and congratulations on a good set of numbers. I remember there's been some commentary around, you know, high competitive intensity, and there has been some share loss in the HDFC Bank channel as well as a result of that. So can you update us, on that part of the business? How is that moving? Are we gaining share again out there? Second, there's a negative variance due to low fixed cost absorption of about 150 crores. Is it more to do with Exide Life? Can you explain why this has arisen and how do we see this moving? And finally, looking at business from the agency channel, QOQ, there seems to be some drop over there. So what is exactly happening? I thought that, you know, Q3 would be even stronger, and now we've got more Exide Life agents also. So if you could update us on, you know, how that integration has progressed, how many of the agents have you able to retain, and yeah, some color around that.
Yeah, Madhukar, I'll start off with HDFC Bank, hand over the fixed cost question to Neeraj, and then agency channel to Suresh. On the HDFC Bank, so we are working very closely together, right from senior leadership to, you know, all the way down at folks at their branches, and you will start seeing uplift. We already started seeing that in some of the branches and some of the geographies where we were lagging. And also, you know, what is noteworthy is that top line is also a function of what kind of risks one is willing to take on one's balance sheet, what kind of risk one reinsures and retains, and at what margins. So H-Bank certainly understands those nuances, and what I can say is that there is a concerted focus on how the counter share can certainly move upwards and stabilize. So you'll see more of that happening. And as the culmination of the merger starts, date of culmination starts coming closer, you'll certainly start seeing more of that. What is noteworthy is that even ex-HDFC Bank, we have grown about 2.5x market growth. And that is really what is important, and this is nothing new, because this is one of our stated objectives of having a balanced distribution mix. And that has stood us in good stead, whether winning new partnerships like AU Small Finance Bank, last quarter we won India Post Payment Bank, and so on. So we'll continue to do that. And while I will, you know, Suresh will handle this later, but just top of the mind, recall agency channel has actually gone up in share from 14% to 18%. So I am not very sure, and maybe we can take it offline as to where you're getting the numbers from. But I'll hand it over to Neeraj on the fixed cost absorption question.
I'm calculating quarter over quarter, so Q3 over Q2 of FY23. If I sort of back calculate, if I subtract the numbers, then that's what I'm getting. Maybe, you know, we can also take it offline.
Because our quarter three growth over quarter two has been higher in agency. So I'm not sure which number you're referring to, but effectively we'll ask the IR team to give you back the specific numbers, but the growth has been stronger in Q3 in agency. In fact, we've had a very good quarter three in agency. And like Vibha mentioned, that the proprietary channel growth, you know, I mean, other than HDFC Bank, also has shown tremendous growth for us.
Okay, got it. And the 150 crores, yeah.
Yeah, so in terms of cost absorption, you're right. Basically, what you see here is a combination of two things. One is, of course, the difference in the operating expense ratio of Exide Life and HDFC Life. So that is something that is definitely some, you know, what you see here as a significant component of this the expense impact. The second bit is reflecting the market realities of increasing cost of acquisition in the open architecture environment. So that is both in terms of individual business as well as, you know, the high growth group credit life business as well. So it's a combination of both of these. And as we discussed, the first objective was from the Exide Life integration was to absorb the business appropriately and then get to margin neutrality. We've done that. And obviously, as we do this, we continue to focus on synergy realization in terms of infrastructure, in terms of any all other expenses, as well as in terms of how to effectively deploy the, you know, manpower that we have from there. So all of these things are something that you will see, you know, regular updates from our end, but largely it will get reflected in terms of how the margin expansion starts to happen once the consolidation is done.
Okay. Thanks. I'll come back in the queue.
Sure.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Anshuman Dev from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi. Thanks for the opportunity. My question is regarding if I look at a quarter-on-quarter VNB margin, and if I assume, let's say, Exide Life is 8% margin, I know it's an assumption, the standalone, apart from the standalone margin and the Exide Life margin, is there a negative additional to that because of the acquisition? Because otherwise it looks like the standalone margin could have been lower on a quarter-on-quarter basis if I assume an 8% margin for Exide Life.
No, I think, you know, 8% margin, you know, it is now very difficult because, as you know, we've moved towards seasonality, and especially for smaller companies, quarter three is a very big quarter. So that assumption itself perhaps is, you know, not quite right. And also if you look at the combined number of branches and so on, that kind of an easing off of those, some of that infrastructure has already started happening.
Just to add, the combined margin for H1 was 26.4, and now it's 26.2 in H1, and now it's 26.5. So all the components of the margin on the merged entity basis have increased in this quarter.
Yeah, understood. No, I was just saying because it was, I think, quarter two standalone would have been somewhere in the range of 28%. So it might have been because of the seasonality that you are referring. It looks like there has been if I assume the margin, obviously that's an assumption.
So if you recollect, in H1 we had reported 26.2 on a combined basis versus 26.4 H1 last year on a standalone basis. There was a 20 basis points gap, which we said we will attempt to bridge over the rest of the year, and in 9 months we've done that with 26.5 versus 26.5 last year.
Understood. Okay. And the second question that I have is on, you mentioned about the composite license. And I remember one of our annual reports also, we mentioned about how we were eager to exploit that opportunity. So any thoughts on the opportunity to sell health insurance?
So this is no surprise, because HDFC Life has been spearheading this opportunity, not really, you know, to redistribute the pie with standalone health insurers the general health insurers, it is more in terms of how do we expand the pie with keeping customer in center, rather than asking the customer to go to different types of insurers for their fulfilling different sorts of covers that they need. That was the intention, and so we've been at least for the last 3 years, and then a committee was formed, as you would recall, and I was part of this committee. A report was submitted over 18 months ago. Thereafter, there was, you know, 8 committees were formed under the new IRDAI chairman, of which Development and Penetration Committee was chaired by HDFC Life. And in that report, we did put the suggestion of composite license as a suggestion of being allowed health indemnity from a product innovation and increasing insurance penetration as an objective. So we remain committed on that, and I'm sure all my peers will also be. So it's more in the spirit of, you know, joining hands to see how can we deliver more insurance to people, and that is the need of the hour.
Thanks a lot. I'll get back in the queue.
Sure.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Avinash Singh from MK Global. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon. A couple of questions. First, I mean, on sort of a distribution, we see a kind of, you know, a direct share being reducing. Of course, some part of it could be explained by this side merger that would have a lower direct. But is it also to do something with a kind of a, you know, a struggle on retail protection overall, and also ULIP sales being tapered? Because I would assume these two products to be kind of a higher selling direct. So that's number one. Second, on this back book surplus generation, yes, I mean, versus 23 billion last year, 30 looks a good number. But we also need to see in the context that, okay, your last year 23 billion would have a material impact from a COVID delta wave. So if, I mean, we were to see kind of, you know, the COVID loss or COVID death claims, excess claims, then surplus, back book surplus generation growth looks a bit muted. So any sort of a clarity on that? These are my two questions. Thanks.
Yeah, so Suresh, take the... Direct.
Yeah, hi. So, look, two, three things on direct. I think one, of course, there has been a little bit of a slowdown due to lower branch walk-ins, and online business also has been low traffic. But I think primarily we have been focusing on the quality of business in direct. So two, three things have happened. One, we have tried to see which segment and what ticket size we want to play in to make sure that the persistency as well as the product mix improves in direct. So that has kind of ensured that we bring the margins up in direct and led to a lower number of NOPs and growth. And it has been kind of a stated strategy by us. Second, of course, is the fact that, look, as in how we are looking at the Exide merger, we are trying to kind of look at, you know, in terms of the overall consolidation of the structures between both of them. So as that happens, the pickup in terms of numbers over the next two, three quarters will start showing again. Some of it also has been a realignment. You know, some of these partners like Policy Bazaar and all that have moved in from a online direct kind of a web aggregator model to a broking kind of a channel. So that's how we are defining it. But overall, you know, given the expanding customer base, we are looking at a direct growth. And, you know, as we expand our branch network, the bigger advantage is with Exide, we are getting a significant number of new branches, especially in South and Tier 2, Tier 3. So we should be able to get what we call the branch channel to activate all over again in terms of growth. But really, the flattening has been more in terms of quality of business and us exiting a smaller ticket size on the direct business over the last two, three quarters.
Yes, quickly on this, on branch thing, you are not looking to close down any sort of or rationalize branches that you are acquiring from Exide?
No, so there is obviously a lot of synergy that we will deliver, we will be able to create in terms of looking at how do we map the two sets of branches. We have gone through a very detailed exercise as part of our integration work streams where we have seen which are the branches. So for instance, HLIC has 383 branches and ELIC had 204. Combined, we will have 584. We had 587 on the day of the merger, but we will merge and close maybe around 140 of these branches. But the idea is not that we will shut down and not, we will look at how we can expand, because the customer segment that we are able to service as well as the employees who we need to place out of the existing branches has been completely mapped out. So we have looked at the infrastructure which is available as a combined entity. So where we believe that the ELI branches are better, our teams are moving in there. Where we believe the HLI branches are better, we are moving in there. And we believe where the both the branches need an upgrade, we have kind of looked at a new location and made sure that we are servicing the customers both from IRDA perspective as well as our overall perspective. And we will then look at newer locations that we can expand on. So there is clearly a cost synergy that we can get out, but that gives us the ability to invest in further branches in other towns that we want to get into.
Okay, thanks. And my question on the back book surplus generation.
On the back book surplus, while yes, for the YTD it looks like 30% is a lower number, but if you look at the quarter, the EB surplus there, last two, three didn't have any COVID impact, the growth is around 18%. So that is a steady state growth that we expect on the EB surplus around the range of 18 to 20%, without any one-off that may come through. So, and that is in line with what we expect the WIF to emerge, given the profile of product that we have been writing in the last 4-5 years.
Okay. Okay, so 18 to 20% kind of a backbook surplus generation growth.
FY22, which is pre-COVID, sorry, with COVID, and if you look at FY21, the EB surplus we generated in this 9 months is very close to that. So obviously for the full year, it's going to be much higher than that.
Okay. And a new business section, of course, will be a function of from which kind of products we are getting growth.
Mr. Avinash Singh, does that answer your question?
That's clear. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nidesh from Investec. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. Firstly, on protection, how are the trends in pure protection X of ROP? What are the growth trends? And if you can share, what is the share of ROP in the pure retail protection?
It's about in the region of 20%, Nidesh. And doing well, but again, we're not going overboard on it. We've been selling it for quite some time now, and we'll continue to do that wherever customer preference is for ROP.
And in pure protection, X of ROP also, we are seeing growth. So you mentioned 13% sequential growth excluding ROP. So excluding ROP, what could be the growth for Q and Q?
We don't necessarily track it that way, Nilesh, because with a multiple of 150 on ROP, that also is pure protection the way we see it. So whether it's limited pay, regular pay or ROP, overall this is the sequential growth that we're speaking about. We are kind of seeing that across the segments. It's not that our ROP proportion has been in the 15-20% range for the past 2-3 quarters. So it's not that segment has exploded any big way. It is definitely becoming more meaningful, but in a gradual manner. So this whole sequential growth that we're seeing is something that we are seeing across each of the categories.
Sure. Thank you. And secondly, what is our share? How much of our APE is coming from HDFC Bank for 9 months and the third quarter?
Well, about 45-47% is coming from HDFC Bank.
In individual business.
Okay. Thank you. That's it for my side.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sanket Goda from Spark Capital. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity. Viva, you said in the call that we are closely collaborating with HDFC Bank. So in that context, just wanted to understand that last year we paid around 1130 crores as an advertisement spend at HDFC Bank branches or ATMs. So do we see this number to grow at a rate which is substantially lower or in line with the APA growth, which was not the case last 4-5 years? So just wanted to understand that could be potentially a lever for margin expansion going ahead. So when you say closer collaboration, it is market share or cost or what exactly you mean to say in that sense?
See, right now, given that the merger is yet to be consummated, it is still in terms of working together, but not into deep strategic level conversations when they become our parent and sit at the board level, strategize with us and so on, right? Those are conversations perhaps for another day. But right now it is more in terms of how does our counter share stabilize, because ultimately when you're competing with unlisted players, there is top line is often a function of how much risk one is willing to underwrite, how strong are one's underwriting practices, and what is that at what cost, right? So some of that calibration is what I was referring to. Other things in terms of what is the cost of business and so on, I think the very fact that no insurer today that holds more than 50%, no bank that holds more than 50% has even, does not have open architecture at all. Forget about even commercials, right? So I think those sorts of things are more strategic level discussions which will follow.
And some of these costs will also be based on how HDFC Bank expands. Their number of branches is going to increase by almost 700. We would want to make sure the visibility of our products is across all these branches. So, some of them will grow in tandem and all said and done. It is a product which is fairly competitive and we need to ensure visibility across all their branches.
Got it. But have you seen the counter market share and the counter increase in since the announcement of merger has happened?
We are beginning to see in a lot of geographies.
Okay, fair point. And second question is more on data keeping. So the economic variance number of 1160 odd crores. So can you break it down into how much was driven by debt and is there any impact of equity on that 1160 odd crores?
Okay. Ishwari.
It is mainly coming from the increase in the yield curve at the short end. If you see the curve from 1 year to 5 years has increased in the range of 1 to 2.25%, average about 1.6%. And if you look at the sensitivities, for 1% increase in interest rate, the EV falls by around 2%. And for the average of 1.6%, the EV has fallen by around 3% odd, which is about 1,030 crores. And the balance is from the equity volatility because of the lower equity returns during the 9 months. We have some negative impact of 125 crores. These are two broad reasons for the negative investment variance.
Sure. So why I was asking this question is that we said in the call, at the start of the call, start of this year, that we are baking in lower unwind rate because we expect the equity returns to be lower.
Do we see a positive surprise there, any possibility, or it will remain the level what it is expected today?
It's expected to be remain at the current level because there's a lot of volatility. It's only in Q3 we've seen a small upside, but again, we see some stress.
Got it. Perfect. And last one from my side. If you really do you want to disclose the hedge coverage ratio, which you might be calculating internally based on what are the instruments you have internally, like FRAs or PPDs and internal cash flows from the other products. So if you want to put a number against the hedge coverage ratio against the likely cash flows which you get in the guarantee product, any number you want to suggest, how is our hedge coverage ratio?
So, Sanket, a couple of things here. One is basically two kinds of guarantee products. One is the single premium guarantee products, which are basically duration matched through just matching the asset and liability duration. On the regular premium products, we said this is basically cash flow matching using three large areas. One is internal cash flows from lower duration liability products. Second is FRAs. Third is partly paid bonds, and then some sort of GSEC stripping. So these are three or four components that we use. We don't necessarily want to talk about each of the numbers because it's dynamic at the back end. We do take calls based on how the interest rates are moving, how the FRA spreads are moving in the market. And this multi-pronged strategy helps us do that from time to time. And through a combination of each of these, we want to stay as closely cash flow matched as possible.
Okay, perfect. Thanks. That's it from me.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nitin Jain from an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hello. Am I audible?
Yes.
Yeah, hi, Nitin.
Yeah, hi. So thank you for the opportunity. So my question is, you mentioned that company has achieved margin neutrality in the 9 months FY23. So will this continue going for the full year? Because for FY22, the VNB margins were north of 27%. So can we expect to maintain margin neutrality for the full year as well?
Yeah, based on trends that we're seeing right now, don't see any significant threats, all things being equal on the economic front.
Right. And this will be on a consolidated basis, right?
Yes.
Okay. And just a follow-up to that, although the pre-merger numbers are not disclosed in the press release, will it be possible to share the VNB margins pre-merger?
No, so that's the point that I made in my comments, that actually it's not that we have it and we're not disclosing it. Everything is completely enmeshed. So it's not, for example, that they had a broking business or they had some other business and we didn't have it. Whatever they had, we had. So it's all, management teams are now all, you know, the hierarchy has been collapsed, locations have been collapsed, like Neeraj mentioned, branch rationalization has happened. So, you know, even internally now we call it Bangalore office and Mumbai office. So there isn't even, and there are people movements completely fungible. Even a senior executive management team, we have representation, you know, and so on. So we just don't track that anymore.
Okay. So just in terms of qualitative comment, have you seen an increase in the pre-merger VNB margins, QOQ?
Definitely, yes, absolutely. And that's why our earlier estimates were that it would take earliest 12 months and maybe a little bit more for us to get there. But we've been able to deliver this in much earlier, you know, almost three quarters earlier.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, please limit your questions to one per participant. The next question is from the line of Shyam Srinivasan from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Thank you for taking my question and good evening. Just first one on composite license, just going back, which are the areas that you think you will show more priorities on? Is it like health insurance? Could there be organic or inorganic options that you will look at? Also M&A, so I just wanted to get a sense, do you think this opens up M&A not only for you, maybe for the industry as well?
Yeah, I think all various permutations will emerge, but I'm also of the belief that it's not going to happen overnight. And reason I'm saying it is, look at FDI today, right? People are allowed to invest up to 74% and we are far away from that. So just because there's an enabling provision, some of these things are group level decisions, there are capital allocations, there are multiple companies in the group, there are different valuations, costs, tax, because taxation aspects are very different, and the horizon is very different for a life company versus general company. The way we look at it is that let us see in terms of what are the contours of eventual regulations, and then we will see. Of course, we have done some homework, but it's not slam dunk. And also, we don't have to be a manufacturer in every case. In some cases, we might just be a distributor. In some things, we might be, have this as a rider. So there are various aspects. Even today, we work, we have a combined product with HDFC Ergo, and that's doing well, which effectively we are able to distribute health protection cover for our customers. And so on. So various models will emerge. And actually, speaking with a regulator, that's also their intention, wherein what I understand is that you don't have to be a full bells and whistles insurer. You could be a specialized insurer only doing crop or only doing rural or only doing disability and so on, which might require lesser capital than the onerous capital requirements of a life insurer. So we'll have to see. But apart from composite, we are also enthused, and this was also there in the Development and Penetration Committee report, that why not allow insurers to also distribute other products, each other's products, which are, first of all, anyway governed by our common regulator. And secondly, if banks can distribute life insurance and general insurance, why can't we mobilize some of those other financial services products and be a distributor? Especially in our branches, our feet on street, our direct channel, our online channel, and so on. So we would be equally enthused with if some of that were to come through.
Got it. And quickly squeezing my second question. Deposit rates have seen a very sharp jump as banks have fallen over each other to raise rates. Despite that, I think non-par savings, even for the quarter, Q3 has been strong. So are you seeing any early signs that, as rates go up, that you're seeing pressure on your guaranteed income products? Have you responded by raising our own rates? So just dynamics around this and maybe the path forward for these two classes. Thank you.
I'll start off, Suresh, you can add. Like we mentioned last quarter, when there was a lot of questions in terms of what's going to happen because deposit mobilization, and we put the numbers into perspective, wherein it is less than 2% in terms of new mobilization and about 0.2-0.3% if you include the back book of banks. So that is number one. Number two is that, these non-par Sanchay Plus category products, which now has, in a way, has been born, have caught the imagination of people and how they're able to do asset allocation in terms of their savings from. Some portion might be for liquidity purposes in bank fixed deposit. At the same time, this is a lifelong guarantee or some other forms of longer term guarantee, which also they want. So it's not really fungible as such, and that's exactly why, like we said, and that's what panned out, not only for us but for the sector also, no real big ticket impact or dent because of this drive towards deposit mobilization.
Yeah. I think Vibha covered it, but frankly, this segment on the non-par side has almost grown by some 60-67% for the industry. So it's really created a section by segment by itself, and it's a question of asset allocation to this. In fact, we are fairly agile in terms of our pricing. It need not necessarily be that we need to increase. Right now, we have actually brought a little bit of a reduction to maintain profitability of this particular segment. And we do believe over a period of time, we will probably see the industry following this. So it's not that we need to compete with deposits. I think this has a space for itself, and we will do it with an independent pricing to make sure that this segment remains profitable for us.
Thank you, and all the best.
Thank you. Participants are requested to please limit their questions to one per participant. The next question is from the line of Supratim Datta from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead.
thanks for the opportunity. So I'll just continue from the last participant. So typically, you know, with the yield curve flattening, the profitability of guaranteed products reduce. So just wanted to understand that, you know, what needs to be the spread between the short-term and long-term yields for this product to remain viable?
Yeah, so I think that's one factor, I guess, which you can't control in terms of the slope of the yield curve. So what you have to do is, you know, some of what Suresh mentioned and what we've been talking about in terms of being disciplined in terms of pricing. Whether it's the annuity product or it's the regular premium guaranteed products, you largely, first of all, ensure that your risk management is appropriate in terms of matching your cash flows especially for the regular premium products, and duration match for the single premium products. That's something that's top priority. Then you figure out what kind of you know, credit risk that you're willing to take to try and get the yield pickup. Within tolerance, you do that to try and get the maximum yield that you can out of the assets that match the liability. Then you figure out what's the kind of you know, competitive landscape that is around to be able to, you know, not be the highest rate, but at least be in the vicinity. And then, of course, you have your, you know, margin sort of profile in mind. And all of these things are something that need to be considered to be able to manage the profitability. So irrespective of which way, when we had launched the product, we had a fairly steep yield curve, as you know, about 3.5 years back. And today we have a flattish yield curve. But we've been able to manage our spreads broadly, given the pricing discipline that we followed in terms of both the annuity as well as the non-par savings products.
Okay. And
sorry to interrupt you, Mr. Ratta. May we request you to please rejoin the queue? We have participants waiting for the turn. Thank you. The next question is from the line of Abhishek Singhal from Naredi Investments. Please go ahead.
Good evening. Thanks for taking my question. Has the company got permission to do health and business? If you have got it, should you do some business now? And health insurance plan will be on or third party? And second and last question, more aggressively, IDFC Bank is opening its branches. The more it is not affecting the premium, when will the effect on the insurance premium start?
So on the first part, like I mentioned to one of the earlier callers, that right now the extant regulations do not permit us to seek or file any license for to do health indemnity. So we will have to wait based on what the finance ministry and whether that is able to, you know, in what form or shape we see final light of day on composite health and so on. So we'll have to wait for some time. What I did allude to earlier was that we continue to remain interested in being able to incorporate some of these things that we are not allowed to do today into having features within our products so that we can have product innovation and not have these artificial constructs as to where does a life company start, where does a general company start, where does a standalone health, where is pension and so on. Because we have to keep customer in center of what we do. And ease of giving solutions to some of the risks being faced by the common person, I think that is really what all of us should be focused on. So we'll wait and see, and we'll hopefully have some clarity towards the end of this financial year. On your second point on HDFC Bank opening up new branches, while they are opening and we are certainly there in the new branches, you know, new branches do take some time because they're fledgling branches. Often start with you know, very small area. It is stabilizing in terms of their banking activities, and it takes a good 2 to 3 years before it starts focusing on distributing third-party products. But we are there in most of the branches. You will start seeing some of the uptick, like I mentioned to you, as you know, over the next 6 to 12 months, in terms of closer working with the bank, and that's stabilizing.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Atul Mehra from Motilal Oswal Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hey, good evening and thank you for the opportunity. In terms of the composite license, as and when hypothetically it goes through, would there be merit in one mega organization of HDFC
both the health insurance, basically the general insurance business and the life insurance business coming together? And do you see like the two companies coming together then and creating one large insurance for all the needs? Do you see merit in that, or you believe both would perhaps do better individually? Thank you.
So we have this model across the world, and even where there are where this is a possibility, both models exist. There are some groups that have composites, some groups that are that are bespoke only for one or the other, and there are merits and pros and cons in both. So obviously the merits would be that you would require lesser overheads, you would probably be able to have better end-to-end view of your customer. Your customer doesn't have to go elsewhere for their insurance needs. Upsell, cross-sell, you know, all of those things. And some of the negatives could be that these are very different perhaps products, especially when you're looking at crop and motor and PNC. There could be different capital requirements, investment horizon could be very, outlook could be very different, taxation could be different, and so on. So these are really for shareholders to take a view on, and more a strategy level call rather than a company operating level call.
Got it. Thank you very much. All the best. Thank you.
So, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Bhavya Sangri from Fortress Group. Please go ahead.
Hello. Thanks for taking my question. My question has been answered. I just like to get some data points for bookkeeping. Could you just give us the data for HDFC Bank's counter share within individual business over the past 2 years, like FY 20, 21 and 22 year end on channel mix?
See, we are not giving specifics of, because counter share and so on is also, because at the same time, if you were to look at counter share of value of new business, it's a very different outcome. If you look at counter share of what is the risk on the balance sheet, these are very different outcomes and so on. I think what is important is that our growth in the, say, in this quarter, quarter three, for example, has been faster than industry level growth, regardless of any counter shares or regardless of any of the other dynamics of open architecture that we thrive in, and ability to attract new partners. So just defocusing on just one relationship of any kind has been our core stated strategy, and that has stood us in good stead time and again.
Got it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pallavi Deshpande from Sameeksha Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for taking my question. So I think in the previous answer, you alluded to this, the fixed cost absorption being actually a split between a higher cost of acquisition and the Exide Life business. So if you could just give us a, you know, a sense of how much should we take it as the split. And just also on this cost of customer acquisition again, that which channel would that be that you are seeing this?
Yeah, so you could take it as broadly, you know, half and half. Directionally, you could take it as that. And we did mention to you in terms of our plans to get the synergy realization out of the combined business now. That is something that you will, I mean, we've already started delivering on that. Margin neutrality is the first proof of that, and we'll see expansion as we go forward. As far as cost of acquisition going up, that's something that is happening across the board, largely in corporate distribution with open, with open architecture. And that's something that we've been, in all our relationships, that's something that we are seeing across the board in terms of increasing cost of acquisition, in terms of partners, as well as in terms of give the expansion, putting in more manpower. We're acquiring new distribution with, you know, companies such as India Post Payments Bank last quarter, and more recently AU Small Finance Bank. We've scaled up our partnerships with Yes Bank, IDFC, Saraswat, as well as Bandhan Bank in a very big way. All of that requires a fair bit of investment, and that is something that we would expect to continue. Of course, we will try and get synergies out of any fixed cost absorption that will come out of our proprietary distribution. That's the reason why we want to continue growing that to get more fixed cost leverage. But as far as corporate distribution is concerned, we do see this investment continuing as we go forward. And our margin realization, VNB growth, as well as cash generation through PAT is something would happen after absorbing all of that.
Right. So the fixed cost absorption side, is that over? We see more impact of that in the fourth quarter.
No, that's something that is baked in. We will obviously keep chipping away at that as we go forward.
Right. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Neeraj Doshniwal from UBS India. Please go ahead.
Hello. Yeah, hi. So wanted some sense on life beyond FY23, post-margin neutrality. How do we see AP, VNB and kind of growth we are pegging in after? Because we have seen some green shoots in terms of HDFC Bank coming back, agent productivity improving, mix improving, protection probably coming back. So just wanted your sense how we are factoring in, what kind of growth we can gain.
Yeah, hi. So we should grow. We should be back on track to grow faster than the industry. You know, all our channels should do well. We've demonstrated, and resigned my comments about banks, all our other bank assurance partnerships doing very well, and agency being 2x our company level growth. So we expect that trend to continue, and also the distribution synergies to kick in with the merger, especially in some of the geographies which were not wherein we were not really focused on. So that should come through. And also, in terms of profitability, we should continue to inch upwards and deliver about VNB in the range of about 18 to 20% growth.
Okay, and anything on persistency, given we have been delivering improvement on persistency for quite some time, do the levers still available or only in ULIP probably we are lagging, and is it on actuals in EV right now, or we have some assumption change capacity bandwidth available? How one should think about it?
So right now we're tracking well. What is also noteworthy, I think, is, while we talked about margin neutrality, we have also reached close to neutrality on 13-month persistency, despite, as you know, Exide Life being much lower. And as we write new business of, emanating out of distribution strength of Exide Life, we will put in a lot of rigor, and you'll start seeing that new business delivering fairly decent levels of 13 months, inching upwards to ours. Having said that, I think, we are very enthused to be present meaningfully in the non-tier 1 segment. And the way we are going to be looking from next year onwards is, obviously, we don't want to dilute the high-quality business that we have built in the tier 1 segment. So that is something we'll be monitoring separately, but at the same time, in terms of a mix, we will see some level of different level of persistencies in tier 2 and 3, because that is really the nature of that geography. And that's to say, whether persistency or mortality, there will be a haircut to what you see in tier 1 outcomes. So you'll see some of that, and that's how we are building our projections going forward. Also, if you were to look at it, I just mentioned that we have tied up with AU Small Finance Bank, India Post Payments Bank, and all of this is with a purpose. Apart from being great partners and franchises, but also, that is the place, those are the places that interest us, and you will see more penetration into those geographies. So there will be a mixed impact in a nutshell.
Got it. This is very helpful. Last question. In terms of VNB triangulation, if I compare the standalone margin walk last quarter and the consolidated, there have been two impacts in terms of both the product mix and the fixed cost mix. So we have talked about product mix also, I think we have done well. So how fast we can ramp up, or have we categorized these two which will ramp up faster in terms of movement given mix is improving? Any roadmap to that?
No, it'll have to be a bit of both, really. No real clarity in terms of how much will be contributed by each of these. It could depend, it could really depend in terms of what period of the year we're talking about. But both of these will be equally important as we go forward. VNB growth is going to be a function of three things. It's going to be a function of the growth. We've already articulated our aspiration to grow faster in the sector. And inching up margins, that will come out of some of these shifts. From a medium to long-term perspective, we know that protection will become a larger part of the business. Annuity is already scaling up, will continue to do so as we go forward as well. So product mix shifts over a period of time will continue to be meaningful. And as we expand our proprietary distribution, operating leverage is also something that will be very meaningful as we go forward, apart from the shorter-term synergy realization from the combined business.
Got it. Thank you so much. This was really good. And all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Amit Jain from Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my question. So just wanted to check that in terms of HDFC Bank, so do you see any particular product segment which is selling higher or it is like sort of uniform? And how does that compare to other bank partners? Thank you.
So there has been a little bit of a focus across most of our banker partners on the non-par segment that has grown, you know, even if you were to look at it, the segment has grown in banks from almost 30% in FY21 to 38%, which is reflecting in our number also. It is also and the whole segment for the industry has grown by 67% is our estimate in terms of what kind of numbers are looking at. Similarly, there has been a growth on the annuity business also. So, these are actually flavors of the year in terms of how the product is positioned. We will probably see some focus coming back in terms of retail term over the next 1 year. But clearly, you know, we have always managed to maintain a balanced product mix. It's just that UL, we are slightly wary of in terms of that it shouldn't go beyond a certain percentage. I think we mentioned in earlier calls also that we want to ensure that each of our channels is profitable and we make sure that the product mix is appropriate to the channel to make sure that the channel by itself remains profitable. So depending on, you know, how we want to push at HDFC Bank or agency channel or our other bank our partners, we kind of maintain this mix across each of these channels.
Sure. Thank you. That was helpful.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Madhukar Ladha from Nuvama Wealth Management. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good evening. Thank you for taking my question again. So, you mentioned in your opening remarks about the approvals that you applied for opening the branch at GIFT City. So can you talk a little bit more about what sort of business would you look to build from there?
So, you know, this is in the initial stages. We have opened a branch of our HDFC Life and Re subsidiary out of DIFC at the GIFT City. We have a distinct advantage in terms of being able to operate as a branch and in some sense a lead into the market. We are evaluating our product strategy, but we are looking at dollar-denominated products, whether it's in terms of health, whether it's in terms of education, or whether it's in terms of annuity. We have certain frameworks in mind, but we are still waiting for the overall guidelines to emerge from the regulator there. Once the guidelines have fallen into place, we will confirm which products we would want to launch. We are in some sense ready with our business plan and operating plan, but clearly these are different segments, different markets, but it will be a huge opportunity for the NRI customers who can look at these products coming out of a brand like HDFC in India, and also an opportunity for the Indians to be able to take dollar-denominated products for, you know, coverage of health and some of these education-based kind of products. So there are initial thoughts and concepts. Some of them we have formed up, but we are waiting for the overall clearances to come in and we should be quick to launch on this.
And what's the sort of expected timeline? Can you, who is exactly the regulator in DIFC for insurance? And, what would be the timeline for something like this?
So timelines in some of this is not very easy to predict as such. The IFSC is regulated by IFSCA, which is the GIFT City Unified Regulator, which is there in place. We also have DFSA, who manages our overall regulations for the subsidiary out of the Dubai subsidiary. We have recently got a certificate of registration, which has been set up by the IIO. And the IFSC branch will be an IIO setup. and this came in November, but some of the other regulations are expected to come in. We will obviously wait for the product guidelines in terms of who will approve these products, but clearly, you know, this will have to be first cleared by the IFSCA here in India in terms of what kind of products will be allowed for us to sell.
Got it. I'll connect with you more offline on this. Thank you.
Sure. Yeah.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Avinash Singh from MK Global. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. One question, because I mean, on the annual routine, I mean, the budget is around the corner. I mean, there has been a lot of noise from both the ends. But if at all, I mean, you know, life insurance maturity proceeds, if they are to be brought under the ambit of taxation, if, then do you see that the products like the non-par guaranteed, you know, products will remain viable to be sold profitably?
So, Avinash, here, since it's hypothetical, and also given the need for actually having more tax benefits than lesser, just given that our insurance penetration has gone down than moving steadily upwards. But hypothetically, if you were to say you're referring to 1010D, if that were to go away, I still think that that category has been born. Why is that category born? Because people are saying that, you know, if I were to retire in the next 10 years or thereabouts, I don't know what are going to be the interest rates and what am I going to earn at that point in time. It could be low single digits. And I want to remove this volatility from having a worrisome retirement time. So I want certainty, and which is exactly our campaign, which says my first salary after retirement. That has caught the fancy of people to say that there is this particular aspect will be completely non-negotiable regardless of any macro events, any other economic events, and so on. So it is lesser to do with tax. Yes, one has to be competitive on IRR, so with that is something we have to see. But this birth in category is not a tax-led demand, but more in terms of having certainty of cash flows when one is in the retirement phase or later on in life.
Yeah, I mean, that's a possible scenario. I mean, on annuities, I didn't even annuities, taxable, so I understand that part. I was sort of a bit on this non-par guaranteed, I guess, subject plus, or offer by peers, where, of course, you know, that maturity proceeds being tax-free, that particularly for the affluent class who are in the higher tax bracket, makes a lot of sense. Fine. I mean, of course, this is hypothetical, and I do agree with you that definitely it is the next step to tax.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Samyak Shah from Sameeksha Capital. Please go ahead.
Yes, thanks for giving me this opportunity. So, you mentioned that we insurance are back on the table.
Sorry to interrupt you, Mr. Shah, but we are unable to hear you. Your voice is echoing.
Hello, am I audible now?
You are not clearly audible, sir.
Hello, is it fine now? Is it better?
Management, shall we continue with the question?
Yeah, we'll try and take this question. Go ahead.
Please go ahead, sir.
Yes. So, do you expect any reduction in reinsurance premiums or can they be flat going ahead?
So I'll start off, and Neeraj, you can add. There are different ways of us getting a better arrangement from reinsurers. Price is one, and like I alluded to earlier in one of the questions, that we are beginning to see a lot more reasonable and collaborative approach, quite rightly, by reinsurers now that COVID fears have resided. Receded, and so that in a way helps us write more business and defray some of our costs. So we're seeing that. Hypothetically, can it happen? Neeraj, you want to take this question?
I'm sorry, just to be clear, was your question in terms of rates coming down or? Yeah, okay. So, see, directionally, the way we are going is we are looking at increasing penetration, expanding into tier 2, tier 3. Expanding beyond covering just the salaried high-income individuals, right? So when we are directionally moving that way, you can expect the risk profile the consequent underwriting process that Vibha spoke about, as well as pricing, to need to reflect that to be able to build a sustainable business. So, you know, pricing should be appropriate. We have no real, preference for which way they would go. We would want it to be appropriate in terms of offering meaningful cover. At the same time, business being profitable with risk being appropriately priced. If there is expansion that's going to happen in higher risk segments, pricing should reflect that. And, you know, any business that is done without keeping that in mind, we believe will not be sustainable. Even today, we are seeing different practices in the marketplace in terms of pricing as well as in terms of underwriting. I guess for a product which typically has a term of 20 to 40 years, it's only appropriate that pricing takes that into account. Pricing is one factor. It's important, but not the only one. There are also avenues which, are important in terms of being able to assess the profile of an individual, being able to use data more effectively, being able to use underwriting models more effectively to be able to, improve the customer acquisition process. So a lot of these things we believe will be enablers as we go forward with more and more data, not just on demographics in terms of income, but also in terms of health over a period of time based on customer consent should be available. That should make a process a lot more efficient and pricing finer based on customer segments that we are going to be offering.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this will be the last question for today, which is from the line of Dipanjan Ghosh from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening. I hope I'm audible.
Yes, please go ahead, Dipanjan.
Yeah. Just a few questions. One is on the annuity segment. We've seen the market leader take multiple price hikes on few products. So in that context, from a medium-term perspective, how sensitive is this segment to pricing? And in that, I mean, how do you see the margins in that segment shape up? Second, on the non-par side, it seems that there has been marginal increase in tenor and also a bit of increase in the regular pay variant. So from a sequential perspective, has that had some impact on margins? And lastly, a data keeping question, if you can break your operating variance YTD.
Yeah, on your first point on annuity pricing, we keep calibrating it. At the same time, like with everything else, it is never only the price. It's a whole host of things. There is a lot of engagement on the ground. There are engagements at various levels with corporates, with that's on the group side, on the retail business, with nodal officers, with many aspects. So yes, price is important, like even in retail business, but I would say that it is one of the levers that is there, and we stay away from taking really aggressive calls. That is, it is very tempting to go down that path. But if you're not able to really earn that spread, then we would really question as to why are we doing this. Because that way we could do many other things. We could be very aggressive on protection. We could be, so why only in annuity business, right? So it's always a balance in terms of either mortality or financial risk management. At the same time, you have to stay in the game and with a healthy dose of strong partnerships and building bottoms-up connect. You want to add anything, Suresh, on annuity?
No, I think, we were right in the sense that we have been calibrating. Like we mentioned, we see a huge opportunity on the OMO segment. We try and look at the group annuity based on relationships as well as in the process and how we've been able to work with a lot of large corporates in terms of being able to get this business. The brand helps us get a clear leverage in terms of the pricing. And I think it is important because a lot of people who want to invest would want to stay with HDFC over a large, longer period of time. But we remain competitive. We have a very large trained workforce on the ground who's able to explain the benefits. We're trying to build an ecosystem around what kind of a platform we'll be able to offer the customers in this particular segment. So it is a very, very large opportunity. And I think in some sense, we are happy if more and more people come in because, look, it will only expand the pie on this particular segment. So we are focused. I think we are very clear. And it's always good to stay within limits or tolerance in terms of what kind of the overall business is there. And we keep coming in and out of the segment because we're fairly well diversified. So for instance, on group term, we have been quiet for quite some time. We feel that, look, we can probably play larger on the group term now that things have stabilized. So these are some of the plays that we have between the term and annuity kind of a business.
I think on the next one, on non-par tenure you had, you want to take that point? You're saying that it is more on the longer
end? So my question was, it seems that there has been some increasing customer demands towards longer tenure, regular pay brand as a whole for the industry and to some extent maybe for HDFC Life also. So that from that perspective, is it has that had any benefit on the margin?
So this entire return guaranteed segment over the last 3.5-4 years, we've actually seen a fairly broad spectrum of customer demand. It has been at the longer end for sure. It also has now with Sanchay fixed maturity plan that we've launched a few quarters back. It's at the shorter end as well. Folks who are preferring to pay maybe one premium or maybe five premiums and have a 10-year horizon instead of a 20-year horizon, that's also a fairly meaningful segment and for business. We had mentioned about 1/6 of our non-par business is coming from there. And also within at the longer end, also there are preferences for either taking bullet payments or lump sum payments or some preference for taking income over a extended period of time. So there are multiple options that exist and there is preference around that. As far as margin delivery is concerned, again, it's a function of managing the spreads. Of course, longer-term products will be more profitable compared to shorter-term products. But even within shorter-term products, we had mentioned that it is with pricing discipline, you can manage fairly respectable margins out of that as well.
Sure. And lastly, if you can just quantify the operating variance breakup for the year-to-date.
It's mostly persistency variance. Mortality is a small positive and expense is moderately positive. So most of the operating variance is coming from better persistency.
Sure. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this was the last question for today. I would now like to hand the conference over to Ms. Vibha Vadalkar for closing comments.
Thank you, Rutuja. We would like to thank you all for attending the call. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. On behalf of HDFC Life Insurance Company Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us and you may now disconnect your lines.